Hey everyone, we want to tell you about a podcast we think you will really enjoy. It's called Dressed, The History of Fashion. Fashion is about more than pretty clothes. What we wear matters, and each episode of Dressed explores the cultural, social, and political importance of clothing.
Hosted by fashion historians April Callahan and Cassidy Zachary, the duo scour primary source material to bring you stories straight from the glossy pages of fashion history. From the inimitable Hubert de Givenchy to Leah Gottlieb, the pioneering founder of the luxury swimwear brand Gore-Tex, Dressed explores fashion's movers and shakers from the most famous to the relatively unknown.
Recent episodes include a two-part history of the swimsuit, one of the most controversial garments of all time, while another explored the history of hair work, the fashion for wearing jewelry made from human hair. One of our favorite episodes is The Body, Fashion and Physique, an exploration of the fashionable body and how it shifts over time. We all love making our own clothes, and this podcast helps us learn more about the history behind the garments.
Each week's episode is accompanied by images posted daily to their Instagram at @dressed_podcast. Episodes are released weekly on Tuesdays, just like us. Listen and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. We know you're going to love Dressed, so go check it out. And now, on to the show. Da 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 da. Da 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 da.
Hello and welcome. I'm Helen.
And I'm Caroline.
And we love to sew. This is a podcast for makers where we talk about sewing a handmade wardrobe and bring you interviews with inspiring creatives and small business owners in our community.
Today we are chatting with Ali Olson, the co-founder of IndieSew and the designer behind Ali Olson Patterns. She started IndieSew as a way to gather all her favorite independent designers in one online marketplace. And 4 years later, she's still going strong. Ali chats with us about her business, the value of sharing sewing projects online, and her new perspective on body image.
Did you know that Ali is one of the most requested people for us to have on the show?
I'm not surprised. Ali is amazing.
She is amazing.
Hello, Ali. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
To start us off, can you please introduce yourself to our listeners?
Yes, I am Ali Olson, and I'm the co-founder of IndieSew.
And whereabouts do you live, Ali?
I live in Boulder, Colorado.
Awesome. Okay, so the first thing that we always ask our guests is all about their sewing journey. So can you tell us how and when you learned to sew?
Yeah, I think I'm probably similar to a lot of sewists in that my mom taught me when I was little. I think she taught me and my two sisters, when we were all about seven is when she would start introducing it to us. And she's a quilter. And I think our first sewing project together was a quilt. And then I kind of sewed on and off through my whole life into my early 20s. I would do a project with her when I would come home from school breaks and things like that. And then when I graduated from undergrad, I had some downtime, unemployed, and was looking for jobs. And so I began thrifting like a maniac and just altering like really hideous vintage clothes, but it was really fun. And that kind of set me on the course of apparel sewing. And I would say from like age 24 until now, I'm 32, just became like a passion that I was doing in every free moment.
That's awesome. I mean, I think so many people can relate to that, falling into sewing and then just finding it so inspiring and fun that you just want to spend all your time doing it.
Yes.
And it makes sense too, because we've seen your stories and you talk about thrifting a lot and you're still into thrifting. So I love hearing kind of the origin story of that as well.
Yeah. Yes. Thrifting, I think there's two parts. There is the sustainability part of it that I like, of just buying used. I went a whole year without buying anything new when I was in grad school for kind of just a personal challenge. And it totally reframed how I consume goods and how I buy goods. It totally changed my habits. But then there's also selfishly the kind of idea of scoring something really good at the thrift store that you're like, oh man, like this is such a find. You know, it's hard, in especially in really place is populated with a lot of young people, to find good stuff at the thrift stores because they're pretty picked over. And so I love the hunt. That's my favorite part.
And it's so thrilling when you get like a gem at the thrift store. And oh my gosh, yeah. I love it. So can you tell us a bit more about your career path? Like, what did you study in college and how did you come to start IndieSew?
Yeah, I went to school for undergrad for finance and accounting, which just blows my mind because that's the thing I struggle with the most in my business now. I thought my whole life I was really logical and rational and that I didn't have a creative bone in my body. And then graduating from undergrad, starting to sew, realizing I could only really see myself doing something creative. I worked kind of some soul-sucking jobs in accounting for a while, and then decided to go back to school for entrepreneurship in Boulder. The MBA program here has a great entrepreneurship program. And so I came to grad school here knowing that I would probably pursue something in the sewing world because it was just, I could tell like it was, something was about to take off. At least that's what I thought was going to happen. There was just a few indie pattern designers. And so yeah, came here, did the program in 2 years. Actually, during grad school, we had a business plan class, and I wrote a business plan for a business in the sewing world. It was a brick and mortar store, so a little bit of a different business model. But we won a business plan competition with that plan, and that gave me the confidence to just go out and do it. So after I graduated, went and traveled for just a few months, and then came back and approached Steve, who's the co-founder of IndieSew, to see if he wanted to help build the site, and we just set to work. And that was 2014. So it's been 4 years.
Wow. Wow. Like, wow. That's a great story. So tell our listeners, what is IndieSew?
Yeah. IndieSew is a marketplace for the home sewist. So we sell exclusively indie sewing patterns, both in digital and paper format. And we sell sewing supplies. So that's mostly just fabric right now to people who sew their own clothes.
You do so much in terms of inspiration as well. Your wonderful blog and your Instagram account, you're always sharing various indie patterns and tips and tricks and ways to style things. I mean, it's just a wealth of information for anyone.
Thank you.
So please go check it out, listeners. IndieSew.
Thank you.
So how did the idea for IndieSew come about? Why did you decide you wanted to make this type of site and run this type of business? I know you said you were interested in indie sewing and you kind of had that idea for a brick and mortar shop. So how did IndieSew come into the picture?
Well, we iterated a lot. So initially, I was sewing indie sewing patterns, a lot of Grain Line and Victory, some of the first people out there. And I just felt, because there was so few indie designers out there, and there wasn't really great off-the-shelf, shopping carts for these people, so most of them were on Etsy, it just felt kind of disjointed. Like, okay, I think I know of this one designer, and I trust her pattern, so I guess I'll just buy, that pattern. I just didn't feel like there was a great way to, read reviews and find out which sewing patterns were the most popular and which ones have people had the most luck with. And because so few people sewed in my world, sewed clothing with me, it was kind of just like, well, I guess I'll try this one. And I just really saw a need for bringing it together so that one, customers know what they're buying beforehand, they can read reviews, and that we can share photos of what we're doing. So we had known about Ravelry before we started IndieSew. And that's, if you don't knit, that's kind of an incredible knitting community. There's millions of people on it. And that was definitely inspiration for us. We weren't trying to copy a Ravelry, but we were like, wow, it would be really cool to connect with sewists on an online platform. So that was kind of our initial idea, though. Initially, it was going to be an app where you track your fabric stash and your patterns. And we had to figure out how to monetize and make money. And so we transitioned to kind of this marketplace with a little bit of a social network element. But the e-commerce side is still kind of the forefront of the site.
Yeah. And I think it's really interesting the way that you've structured it and the designers that you bring on board. And it's a great opportunity for new designers and smaller designers to get their name out there as well. So it can be such a mutually beneficial relationship in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I hope so. I've been so lucky to have, for example, we had one designer come to us a few weeks ago, Wearology. She's out of Switzerland. And I'm so incredibly grateful that she approached us because her patterns are incredible. Her formatting, the instructions, the illustrations are stellar. And I do feel like she was ready to break into the kind of more of the US sewing market. I think she's probably got a fair number of Swiss followers. So I felt really lucky she came to us, and I hope she also feels that it's mutually beneficial.
Yeah, I'm sure it is, because you do such a great job of promoting the designers that you have up in the Indie Sew Shop. And I love that you make samples of a lot, or do you make samples of all of the
Everything.
Patterns that
Yeah,
see, that's crazy. Yeah. I love it that you're like, this is coming to the shop soon, because you're actually sewing the sample yes. so that you can show it off on social media and on the blog and on your website so that people can see it sewn up by you, which I think is really, really yes. a great touch.
Yeah. And yes. you get that opportunity to just check that it's actually something you want to attach your name to as well, because I'm sure, like, has there ever been a situation where you haven't carried a pattern or decided, like, how do you choose who yep. to carry?
Yeah. There have been times where we felt like the drafting was not up to our standards, or the instructions were really hard to follow. And we just, it's pretty easy at this point, as you guys probably feel the same way, to know what's going to trip someone up, especially if it's a hard sewing technique. And if it's not really well illustrated and I had a problem with it and I couldn't understand it, then often that'll be a point where we'll maybe talk to the designer, like, has anyone else had trouble with this? Or, you know, just to clarify, maybe I'm totally reading the instructions wrong and missing something. It doesn't happen very often. We try to sell mostly, work with the reputable brands and also the people that maybe don't have much of a reputation, but we're really focused on just quality of drafting, quality of instructions. And then there's also this kind of branding component, like, we want the products in our shop to look polished. We want someone, when they download the files, to be like, oh, this is beautiful. Like, I can see, you know, exactly where the seam allowance is and what, you know, just really easy to read. So that is probably our biggest, the three things that we focus on the most.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I'm sure it builds trust with your users and your customers, knowing that you guys are, you know, you have high standards and you're looking for quality work, and you kind of are recognizing that talent out there and carrying the brands that you really believe in. So I think that's really great.
Oh, thank you.
So I want to know, once you decided to start Indie Sew and you kind of, you know, went through a couple iterations and decided on the plan, how did you go about building the site? Because I know it's not just a template that you use. You built the site from scratch, right?
Yes. Oh man. I will say that Steve, the co-founder, he built the entire site. So it took about 6 months. He's a self-taught coder, and he wanted to tackle this challenge of building, one, a shopping cart from scratch, because that is no easy feat, especially building writing code around shipping and like the geometry of what goes in a box. Like, you'd be surprised how difficult that is. But then also beyond the cart, we had this creations portal, which is user uploaded photos and text. And that was something we couldn't find anywhere off the shelf. Shopify wasn't really around then. There wasn't anything on WordPress that could do it. And so we didn't really consider any other option than building it ourselves. So he took him about 6 months. And during that time, I was just working part-time, getting designers on board, trying to convince people that we were legitimate and here's our business plan. And we were doing lots of focus groups, talking to lots of people, what they wanted to see. And then May of 2014, he started building it in December. And in of 2013, May of 2014, we launched. And it was slow going at first, but yeah, we probably within the 6 months, first 6 months, caught some traction. And yeah, the site is still stable today.
I mean, go Steve. That's a testament to his work.
Oh my gosh, no kidding. Yeah, it's an incredible amount of work he did.
So I would love to know how Indie Sew has evolved since the launch, because I'm sure you've made some updates over the years. So how did it look then, and kind of what parts of the site have you changed since?
Oh, this is a walk down memory lane. In the beginning, we were just digital patterns. So our business model, we were working from home, each working from our own homes. We were like, well, this is really easy. We don't have to stock inventory. We don't have to ship orders. We're only going to sell digital sewing patterns. And then people started requesting paper patterns. And so we moved into paper patterns. And that's when Steve had to build out the shipping system, because we didn't have that in place. In, I think, June of 2016, we started selling fabric. So we've kind of widened our product offering, I guess, over the last 4 years. The same kind of core portals, the creations portal, the blog, the pattern shop are pretty much the same. They haven't changed much. We like added a wish list. There's a mile long list of features that we have plans to add to make this kind of a more interactive, community driven space. But honestly, it's stayed pretty much the same, which is why we are ready for a site refresh after 4 years.
Yeah, we saw your recent survey about asking people kind of what they wanted to see in the upcoming refresh of the site. So how's that refresh going to go for you guys? Like, what's the plan there?
Yeah, we are still formulating a plan. It has been 6 months of research. We have looked at switching over to Shopify, which is kind of the leader right now in e-commerce and shopping carts. But after many, many meetings with Shopify and tons of research and looking at our database, and just the migration of our data is a huge, huge undertaking. We decided we need to step back and actually survey our customers and just really survey them about one thing. And that was creations, which Shopify still doesn't have a way to handle our creations. There was kind of a way that they could hack together a system, but people wouldn't be able to go in and edit or delete or change their links to their creations. So that's why we decided to step back and survey our users and see how they would feel, just how they feel about the site in general, but how they would feel if creations went away. And you guys are the first to know that people do not want them to go away. And they would love to see Instagram hashtag photos pulled in, but they don't want creations to go away. So
so they want more of seeing other people's makes.
Yeah, more photos on more bodies, which is totally understandable. That's how I make a purchase decision for sure. So we are kind of, we are ready to, I guess, probably stay the course with our own website, but we need, you know, we need a new homepage. We need just a few kind of visual things, maybe some new branding, and then tackle these things that people are asking for, like more photos and, you know, just our commenting system needs to be upgraded. So that's where we're at now. We kind of know what needs to happen, and I'm just kind of gearing up to like figure out how we tackle that. It's really daunting.
Oh, I can only imagine. Yeah. But it sounds like you're doing the right thing, you know, looking at the bigger picture, listening to your audience, really understanding what they want. I think that's key.
Yeah, I think that we're data people. Like I mean, I could send a survey out every 2 weeks. Just like I don't like to make a decision without asking people what they think. And it turns out that in this community, people are like eager to provide feedback, because your survey you sent out about spending habits, I heard you had, you know, over 1,000 responses. It's just incredible how people just want to participate. So that feels good.
Surveys are really fun, and going through the feedback, I mean, it's so time consuming, but it also just, it gives you so much information about the community that you're serving. So I think it's really valuable to do that once in a while, and you do that so well. Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to seeing what you guys come up with the new site, and you know, when that happens, whenever that does happen, I'm sure it's going to be
awesome. It's a long process, so you know, 6 months probably at least.
So let's talk a little bit about the blog aspect of IndieSo, because you have some awesome content that you share on there. You do pattern comparisons, you post about how to style different garments, you post hacks. You also do some really amazing fabric features where you explain, you know, different fabric terms or different types of fabric, which I love. But I would love to know, do you have a favorite subject to write about?
Those fabric files posts where we go into a deep dive on a particular substrate are probably my favorite because I learn so much. We just did one on linen probably about a month ago, and holy moly, linen's like, I mean, it's the OG fabric, literally. It's like the first textile they have ever found in caves. And yeah, I love those. They're long and they take a long time to research and a long time to write. And people really seem to appreciate them. Most people read them from start to finish if they click over, and I think they appreciate kind of just knowing a little bit more about where the fabric comes from, how it's made, but mostly like, how do you take care of this fabric, and how, like, should I use a different kind of needle when I sew with this fabric? So those are the most fun for me to write and probably get the most response. But I just love blogging in general. I'll blog until blogging's like not even a thing. Style posts, all of that stuff is really fun for me. So
I'm curious to know if you would recommend people to start a blog if they're thinking about it. I know I've seen a few people on Instagram being like, maybe I should have a blog because then I could say more about this project and I could have more photos and I could maybe interact a little bit more. I mean, Instagram's great for that quick fix, but I've seen a few people coming back to blogging, and mm-hmm. I am a huge blogger myself. I love blogging. So yeah, how do you feel about that? Do you think we're going to see a sewing blog resurgence?
I don't know about that. I know I do think people realize it's a lot of work. And if you're not monetizing your blog, it's easy to burn out because you can kind of be like, why am I even doing this? But I recommend it because one, it's an amazing way to document what you've made. And it's an amazing way to like see how you've grown, how your skills have improved, how like you've found your personal style. So if nothing else, I think it's, even if you don't, if it's not a public thing, I think blogging is a great way to just keep track of what you're doing, or even just to look back. I know I'm really terrible at being like, what size did I sew in that last time? We can look back at the blog. Okay. But I think with Instagram, a lot of people are feeling like blogging is going away, but Instagram does not show up in Google searches. And I know, for example, my mom, she sews a lot of the same patterns I do with similar bodies. And she really wants to like find every blog post online to see if they made any adjustments, because she wants the entire picture of like how this is going to fit before she even starts sewing it. So I do think blogging just provides an incredible resource for other people. And that information can be really hard to find in Instagram posts, or it's sometimes easier just to bookmark like a blog page, someone's blog post, when you're getting ready to sew something.
You kind of touched on Instagram there. And I would love to know, because, you know, the sewing community has evolved so much. And when you started IndieSew and you started kind of the creation portal on IndieSew, I don't think that the sewing community was as active on Instagram. And now there's just so much more interaction happening on there and so much more sharing happening on there. And yet you mentioned that your customers are still so attached and interested in you keeping up that creation portal on IndieSew. So I would love to know what your opinion is about the value of sharing projects on IndieSew or on any kind of forum type site alongside social media.
Yes. So I was actually just talking about this yesterday with Angie that there's one kind of very logical benefit of uploading your creations, because you can add a link. And if you have a blog, that link goes to your blog. That is really good for SEO, right? So anytime you have inbound links from other similar websites in the same kind of industry vein, and people are clicking them, that will make your blog show up higher in search ratings. So that's kind of just like a logical thing. But a lot of people are writing really long descriptions of what they changed, what they would do next time, similar to Ravelry. Ravelry is a great resource in knitting. And people read that stuff. Like, I think that might be assumed that people are not taking the time to read it, and they are. So I think it's good to do both. Honestly, Instagram's an incredible way to connect, and you're going to get a ton of eyes if you want. Eyes on your garment, on your profile, and followers, if that's important to you. You should definitely post on Instagram, but I think uploading your creation provides value to people who, real value to people who are ready to sew that thing, and they want your take on the garment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's great to have it there too. Like, you go to the pattern page on IndieSew and then all of the creations are right there and you can read all the reviews, and it's just so easy to find more information and easy to search the pattern database and explore. So I think it all works together so nicely.
Oh, thank you. That's what we were going for.
So the other thing that we were curious to get your perspective on is the indie pattern market in general, because you see all the designers, you see them come and go, and you see what's out there, and you're keeping track of it all, I assume.
Trying to.
How do you feel about it? Do you think that it is saturated? Is it still growing exponentially? Like, what's going on?
Yes, this is a great question. I don't think it's saturated. I don't think every type of garment has been made into a sewing pattern. I know specifically, you know, I'll have something in my closet or something vintage or something I see in a store, and I know, gosh, there's no pattern out there for that. And I don't know or don't want to hack a pattern that's already out there. Like, I think there's a ton more room for new garments to come out. We're seeing that with sales when we look at our data. I mean, indie pattern sales of new designers, people who release things are kind of similar but have different details. I mean, we're not seeing any sort of drop off in just the buying habits of people. So I think there's still a lot more room for new designers and new patterns. I have seen less new designers pop up in the last probably 6 months to a year. And I don't know if maybe that's because they think the market is saturated. I do think people are starting to understand the amount of work it takes and knowledge. And I think people are maybe being a little bit more realistic. I think we saw some designers pop up who were just like, oh my gosh, this is far more work and time than I was prepared for, and decided to not pursue it anymore, which is totally fine, you know? So yeah, I think there's still a lot more room for growth.
Well, that's good to hear. And what kind of advice would you give someone out there who's maybe thinking about starting a pattern company? Because you see what's good and what's not as well. So yeah. Do you have any tips?
So a lot. Like, I think before you start, or like when you're getting ready, you're thinking about starting, just like make sure your skills are up there, that you're sewing, you feel like you could tackle a lot of things. Because if you do start designing patterns, you're going to have, and you know how to fit things, you're going to have people reaching out with fit questions, and you got to be ready to answer those or give them resources. So that would be probably the biggest thing. Just be prepared. Either if you are going to draft your own patterns, or if you work with a pattern maker, you gotta definitely need to kind of know the terminology, the lingo, what changes affect other things in fit. So getting some books, like the Aldrich books are really good. Lauren Dahl's Pattern Workshop is really good for learning Illustrator. I learned Illustrator through her online class. And I would say just be resilient, because it is, just go in with the mindset of having thick skin. You know, it's sometimes you're definitely going to get negative comments, or people who just aren't, you know, attracted to the type of garment you want to design. So yeah, just kind of go in with an open mind, and just make sure like you're ready for fit questions, all of that stuff.
Yeah, that can be really hard, because you can't please everyone, right?
Yep.
And I know what you're talking about there, and it can be a little bit difficult to work through those things. But mm-hmm. I think if you are trying your best and you're producing a product that you truly believe in as a sewist yourself, then I think you can be successful in the market.
Yes. Yeah. And there was one other thing, a good friend of mine who is working on her own pattern line. We had a really long conversation recently about what do you do when you have all the handmade clothes that you need? You no longer feel like you need new clothes. You don't really like sewing for other people. Like, and we had a long conversation, and I was like, I think what you do is, if you're really passionate about sewing and designing, that you design something yourself. And if it fits and you love it, make it into a sewing pattern. Like, it kind of feels like the next step for people whose skills, they can tackle most any project. Their closets are full of beautiful handmade clothes. And they want to continue sewing and working on really challenging projects, but they don't need any more clothes themselves. It feels like kind of the next transition for a lot of people.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. And I think another route you could take is just to slow down with your sewing. We did an interview with Brooksanne just last week, and she was talking all about hand sewing and how you can work that into your process and slow down and just relish those details. And that was really inspiring as well. So if you have so many clothes,
you're picking
things out a little too fast, you can just hit the brakes.
Absolutely. Yep. I love that.
So one of the other things I wanted to ask you about is, I mean, your site is called Indie Sew. You mentioned earlier when you were talking about what you're all about that you carry exclusively independent patterns. So what is it that you love so much about indie patterns?
Well, just the incredible amount of like crowdsourced information. I think indie patterns are sewn, at least now, far more than any of the big four patterns, or at least they're documented more on social media. So if you are looking to sew the Archer button-up, you have literally thousands of data points and photos and anecdotes to read about it. So just like, there's a wealth of information and reviews to look at. In my opinion, indie patterns tend to have, they're just better quality in terms of instructions. It's far easier to figure out what the designer wants you to do, how it's constructed. They test it extensively, typically, so the fit is usually pretty good. Overall, I think it's just like a better experience than if you open a big four, and you're probably in for a lot of muslining if you're sewing like a fitted big four pattern. That's just my opinion. I know some people love big four and are really have sewn them so much that they know exactly how to approach what size they choose and all that. But I just found that indie drafting and indie pattern instructions are stellar for the most part.
Yeah, I love the instruction booklets in particular. They're like little gems you could just read in the book, you know, when you're going to sleep.
Absolutely. Yes.
So if an indie pattern designer wants to be on Indie Sew, tell us what that process looks like.
Usually they send an email to us. There's a contact page on our website. We also have a pattern suggestion form that people can fill out. And we will take a first look at the pattern at the brand and decide if it's a good fit. Usually if the garments in general don't fit with our audience is mostly young women, then we'll usually say, oh, it's not a great fit. But if it does look like a good fit, we'll send them over a fact sheet just so they kind of know how selling on Indie Sew works, the commission structure, all of that. And if that looks good to them, then they'll send over the files and we will get the pattern into the queue. And we'll send them the reseller agreement so they kind of know all the terms, they can sign that. And then our sewing queue does take a bit of time. So it takes sometimes 4 to 10 weeks to get something into the shop, depending on our sample sewer team. We've got about 10 people sewing, and it just depends on the time of the year and how busy they are. So we're working on to create a bigger sample sewing team, but we sew the garment and then we get back to them with any feedback. If it all looks great, we'll tell them we're ready to put in the shop. And then there's just a little back and forth with the product pages, making sure that we've got all the information they want to see on the product page. And then we'll launch it and put it on social media. And yeah, that's how it works.
Yeah, it's a very streamlined process. I myself have gone through it. My yes, patterns are available on Indie Sew. So yeah, you guys do a great job of making people feel welcome. You. So what is Indie Sew focused on right now? What's coming up for fall and why should people go and follow along with you?
We are returning. This is really exciting. We're returning to fabric batches. So what that is, a few years ago, or maybe just about a year ago, we started curating our fabric into small batches that would create little capsule wardrobes. And these were like something we would launch once a month or maybe even a couple times a month. And over the last 6 months, we've gotten so many people being like, will you bring those back? So we're going to start curating little batches of fabric. This isn't like our big seasonal launch. It's just kind of 5 fabrics in the shop that all kind of go together. So that's really exciting. I'm headed to LA next week to go source a few of those. And we are working on a big collaboration with a major company in the indie sewing world, which will launch October 2nd. And that is a fabric collaboration that I am over the moon about. So you should definitely check in, follow us on Instagram before that so you can see what that's all about. And then, yeah, we're working on the website behind the scenes, probably definitely some new patterns, some new Seamly patterns and some new patterns from myself. So yeah, lots of irons in the fire right now.
Ooh, that's so exciting. Okay, you just mentioned a bunch of different things that I want to ask you more about. But let's talk about patterns because you sell other people's patterns, but you also have your own line and we haven't had the chance to talk about that yet. So tell us a little bit about your line of indie patterns.
Yeah, I launched my first pattern, the Lone Tree Jacket, I think, 2 years ago now. And since then I have the Highlands Wrap Dress and the Kila Tank and the Quorum Shop. So 4 patterns total. 3 of those are in print. The Lone Tree Jacket is not in print. And it's been incredible. It was really valuable for me to step into the designer role so I can really relate to our designers. It's been really fun to see the paper patterns in indie fabric stores. Like, that's been mind-blowing to me. Every time I see it, I'm like, I feel so lucky. And I've also honestly been able to see how people can absolutely make a living off of this. Launching into paper patterns and getting a few distributors around the world, a light bulb went off. I was like, oh, okay. Like, this is how people are doing it. So that feels really good. Although I've got so much work with Indie Sew that I'll never probably, at least for now, be a designer who can put something out every 2 months. You know, it'll probably be 1 or 2 patterns a year at the most. So it's definitely something I do on the side, but I love it. It's really super fulfilling.
Yeah. So how do you handle that? Because I mean, being an indie pattern designer and especially releasing paper patterns, that's like a full-time job in itself. So tell us how you managed to take that on and work on that alongside Indie Sew.
Yeah. Well, I will be totally transparent. I work with a pattern maker, so I don't actually draft the patterns. And she and I have an incredible working relationship, and I feel super lucky she's out in Portland. So I'm not doing the drafting, but I do the instructions, the entire instruction booklet, format it. And then, of course, like, the shipping of the patterns is a lot of work. But we do kind of have that. Once you get a shipping system down. Like, you get your scale and you get your label printer. Once you get it all set up, it's really pretty easy to, you know, it's just a few minutes every day to ship out patterns. So I'm certainly not shipping like hundreds of patterns a day. You know, it's just a handful. So it took a lot of brain space to set it up, like anything, you know, just figuring it out, slogging through. But once it, now that it's set up, it does feel truly like something I can do on the side. I'll come in on the weekend and do the instruction booklets. And especially my last pattern, the Kila tank, was so basic that it was an incredibly easy experience. The testing process went really smooth. So it depends on the pattern, though. I'm looking at releasing a very advanced pattern for the next one. And I just have a little bit of like procrastination just because I know it's going to be a ton of work. So yeah, just fit it in where I can.
Yeah, I can imagine that a more complicated garment would just be a ridiculous amount of work. But I want to talk about the Kila tank briefly, yeah, because Helen and I have mentioned it on the show a couple times now.
Oh,
we just think it's such a great pattern, such a good basic. And you really were filling a hole in the market because there aren't really any other basic tanks that you can use for layering that have the nice racer back, but that will still kind of hide your bra straps. It's just got a really, really great design. So congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, it's my favorite.
Yeah, we were going to ask you what your favorite pattern is. So you just answered our question.
Yep, that's it.
That is awesome.
Yeah, it's a great example of how even a simple design can come onto the market and people are still going to be surprised that they want it, that it's something that they haven't considered, or that's something that they haven't really seen that exact version of that kind of garment out there. So yeah, kudos to you on that one.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So what would be your favorite part of the pattern design process?
Oh gosh, probably working with my pattern maker, like sewing up those first few samples is so much fun. And this is, I think, where it comes in. If you do work with a pattern maker or you do decide to design patterns, we have a really good relationship where I can be like, okay, drop the arm's eye half an inch. Let's bring the, you know, like just, it's very easy to, for me to tell what needs to be changed, and she's very good at executing it. So that process is really fun because it's really collaborative. Sometimes I go out to Portland and spend 2 days with her, and I bring a bunch of fabric with me, and we just iterate. Like, I'll sew something up. I'll be like, oh, you know, this princess seam needs to be brought in. She'll change it right there, print it out on her plotter. We'll sew up another one. And it just feels collaborative, and that kind of design thinking where you're changing things and testing it out. I love that part.
Yeah, that sounds like so much fun, especially experimenting with the different fabrics. I personally love that part of the pattern design process where you make it up in a bunch of different fabrics and you get to see how it drapes and falls and and what works, and wear it around and see how it feels. And yeah, it just gives you a lot of information for the launch and to share with people after you've actually put the product out there as well.
Yeah, I think the first time you can wear something you designed like for a whole day, that's a pretty awesome feeling. Like, yeah, I designed this.
So you mentioned that becoming a pattern designer has kind of allowed you to empathize with the people who sell patterns in your shop a bit more. So what is your relationship like, or how has it changed with the people in your shop now?
Gosh, I feel, I don't know how much it's changed. I definitely feel more encouraging to people who are going into paper. It's a huge investment, and I certainly don't think everybody wants to do it, nor should they. But I really try to support those designers who have paper by selling paper patterns and encouraging them to print and giving them any information they need. Like, here's our contacts, here's how you do it. Just because I think it's a way to get so many more eyes on your patterns, especially in other countries. So that's sort of changed in that way. I'm really empathetic when I see an error in a pattern now. I'm like, girl, I know. I've released a lot of patterns with a lot of errors. So I'm not as, I guess, judgmental or scrutinizing about that. I obviously will bring it up, and indie designers are great because they will change it immediately. But I don't stress about that stuff anymore at all.
Yeah, that's so true. And it's even harder when you're in print because you can't just take it back.
Right? Oh, it's the worst. Yeah. Yep.
So how do you decide what to design next and what to release next for Ali Olson Patterns?
It just like depends on what I am reaching for. So earlier this spring, I knew I was going to be wearing a lot of high-waisted pants and shorts because I was all about the Landers and the Persephones and this pair of Free People jeans I wear every single day. And I threw on one day just this little vintage Razorback tank I had with them and tucked it in. And I was like, oh, okay, like this is clearly what I'm going to be wearing every day this summer. Just felt like me. I felt really good in it. And so there really wasn't any question. I actually had the tank top. It's from like the 1950s. It's like a cotton rib tank that's falling apart. And I took the measurements and sent them to the pattern maker. That was really, felt really necessary because I knew I wanted to sew like 5 more of these. Other things though, following trends, seeing what's in the stores, what I personally want to wear, what I find myself wearing throughout the seasons, I'll be like, okay, well, next fall, I know I'm going to want another leather jacket. So let's start thinking about that. So just kind of the things that stick in your brain that don't, you know, the designs that you can't stop thinking about are usually the ones that I just start working on. And there have been ones that I have several patterns that I have started working on and decided to abandon, either because somebody released something super similar, which is super common because we're all following the same trends, or I just like, my heart's not in it. It's too hard to like, the assembly is really complicated and I'm just not ready to try to write those instructions.
Yeah, that's fair. I have those projects too, and maybe I'll come back to them and tweak them. But if your heart's not in it, I think when you're in business, just trying to do this design thing and put those patterns out there, you do need to have that passion and that drive. And so if it's not there, it's not going to happen.
Yep, exactly. Don't push it.
So can we switch gears a little bit and talk about fabric?
Yeah.
All right. So tell us what kind of fabrics you carry in the India Sew shop.
Mm-hmm. So we sell apparel fabrics that are mostly overstock fabrics. So that is fabric that's left over from designers or movie sets that are sold to middlemen. And we go to their warehouses and buy up the apparel fabrics they have. And it's usually pretty limited yardage. You know, we can't buy hundreds of yards of a certain fabric. They usually have a pretty limited amount, and it's considered kind of secondhand or recycled fabric, and it's really fun. So I go to LA, but there are overstock warehouses all over the country. I go to LA and I kind of just walk through this warehouse for a day and pick out fabrics that I think our customers will like, which tend to be pretty neutral, pretty, I guess, classic fabrics. We do throw in some fun ones here and there to see how people respond to them, but just fabrics that coordinate, people can really see themselves wearing every day.
Yeah, you are great at choosing the fabrics, and I love how they tend to go together and you choose things really seasonally appropriate. So yeah, it's always fun to go in your shop and see what you got.
Yeah, thanks.
Do you ever find that challenging, like the fact that you only have a limited amount of yardage that you can get? And I'm sure you have customers out there that are like, when are you going to get more of this? Or can you restock this? So how do you deal with that? And do you ever feel like a draw to go a different way with fabrics and try to work with suppliers that can offer you the option to restock?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a challenge for sure. One thing we try to do is just educate people. We've written a blog post on overstock fabric that is linked to every overstock fabric product page. We link to that blog post so that they know why there's a limited amount available, why when it's discontinued, they will likely not ever see it again because there's probably no more of that fabric in the world left. And I think people tend to catch on really quick. People know that it sells out quickly. If they see something they like, they should get it because it may not come back. But there are fabrics from like the first year we sold fabric, like these Swiss dot ones in particular, that we still get an email probably once a week being like, are those ever going to come back? And they're not. They're just not. So, but yes, I have, like recently for the Kila tank, we did stock. We've sourced a really, really nice rib knit fabric, which is not overstock. It is milled and it's milled in China, but it is incredibly pill resistant, which this is the line I kind of walk with. The sustainability of overstock feels really good to me, but if your fabric is going to fall apart in the washing machine and that garment is going to get thrown away, it doesn't make sense to sew with overstock fabric. And our overstock supplier generally doesn't have a great selection of high quality rib knits. So we have found a mill that makes incredibly nice rib knits. And that feels really good because we know we can restock them. They're a mill. They're not selling to fabric stores. Their minimums are pretty high. So it does take a really long time to get the fabric back in stock because they got to get it made in China and ship it over. It'll take 6 to 8 weeks to just restock it. But it is nice to know that it'll be coming back and I can tell people it will definitely be coming back. So yeah, we're kind of just walking that line. I am passionate about overstock. I absolutely love hunting those warehouses, but I want to mix it in with some other really high quality milled fabrics that will last people years. That's kind of our goal.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I really commend you for being transparent about, you know, overstock fabrics, what they're all about. I encourage our listeners to go check out that blog post. And we've done a couple episodes about sustainability, and buying overstock fabric is a really great way to be a little bit more sustainable with your buying choices and, you know, with your sewing practice. So I think it's a really great thing that you're doing. But also it makes so much sense that you are kind of weighing the pros and cons of getting milled fabric and looking for that high quality stuff that's going to, you know, last for years and years. So it just all makes a lot of sense. And I think you're doing really great things with the fabrics in your shop.
No, thank you. Thank you. I will say though, like stocking overstock fabrics does mean, so transparency, a couple weeks ago, I bought a black denim fabric, Caroline, from Blackbird, because we will never be able to stock, you know, a 10 ounce denim in four colors. And so that's where the benefit lies in shopping Blackbird. You have an incredible selection, and we just will never have that selection. So, and you're an indie store. So I think it's good for customers to like realize the benefits, who's doing what, and like when they need to go find that like amazing tencel chambray that Blackbird most definitely has and everyone loves, that's the place to get it, because it'll be rare something pops up like that in our shop.
Thank you. Yeah, no, I think it's important for, you know, sewists out there to educate themselves and just make buying decisions based on, you know, what's important to them. And yes, I think there's always a balance there, right? You don't have to buy only overstock fabric. You can do a little bit of both, but you can feel good about both of them if there's a balance there, you know?
Yeah. So
I want to know if you're ever surprised by what just flies off the shelf, because I'm thinking of this particular fabric you had. It was like a white window pane crepe just sold like hotcakes, and you kept bringing it back in and it kept selling out. So does that ever surprise you? Are you ever like, what is going on with this fabric? Yes.
Yeah, I'm often surprised, which I'm not sure why. I need to like reevaluate my expectations. I'm not usually surprised by like the colors that sell, but yeah, like that black and white window pane was just a like anomaly. I was like, what? Like how? A lot of people don't like to sew with white fabric, right? Stains can be kind of sheer. So yeah, sometimes I'm really surprised. Sometimes, like I recently this summer, I tried to bring in a bunch of florals, which are not at all my style, but they were really pretty. And we could barely move them. They didn't sell at all, which was just kind of affirmation. Like, okay, I need to keep like within a certain aesthetic, like a curated aesthetic, because the thing, when I go out on a limb thinking, oh, this might sell, it won't sell at all. So it is kind of just a guessing game.
Yeah. And it's good to take chances though, too, to kind of gauge the interest of certain styles of fabric and sort of find what works for you and your shop and your customers. But it's interesting that you said that about florals, because I find that since I started my business, like just the style and the needs of the sewing community have evolved so much. Like at the beginning, I was selling so many florals, and I was like, I actually for a while there was like, I'm not going to carry solids because I don't think solids are going to sell online. Because how do you, like, you know, you can't really translate like the weight and the hand feel of a solid very well with photos, right? So I was steering clear of it. And now, I mean, so much of my business is just selling those like really high quality basics. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting how I think the sewing community has evolved over time to sort of stay further away from those florals and those more novelty fabrics and more into the like really high quality basics and natural fibers, you know, that sort of thing.
Yep. Leslie from Threadbare and Florine and I were talking about recently about why we don't wear the things in our closet we've sewn that we really like, oh, we loved that fabric so much, but wait, we like never reach for that garment, and how that has kind of impacted the fabrics we buy and the things we sew. Like now I'm just like so into sewing jeans, like every year, because I know they just will get so much wear. And I'm not as into sewing blouses in loud prints because I just don't see myself reaching for them. So yeah, it's an evolution.
Okay. You mentioned hanging out with Leslie and Florine, and this was not on our list, but it just occurred to me that I have to ask you about this because I think it's the cutest community story that you guys all got together. So can you tell us how that came about?
Yeah. So Leslie is from Threadbare Garments. She's a blogger. She lives in Kansas City. Incredible style. Incredible human being. So kind. And she's one person who just reached out. I think she was reaching out to see if we had openings on our blogger team. And we just became super fast friends. She is incredibly, you know, she's just a good friend, good about checking in. How did this thing go? I've been thinking about you. And so I really leaned into that friendship over the last year or two, and it has totally evolved into this amazing, amazing friendship. And Florine is, she's a blogger living in Norway, and she has been on our blogger team for a few years and has always been super communicative as well. And like, but, you know, she gets our fabric shipped all the way over to Norway. And she came to Denver last year, and so did Leslie. A bunch of people came to do a big kind of sewing weekend. They rented an Airbnb. And I was going through a lot at that time, wasn't super present with them, but I was like, oh God, I wish I could have hung out with you guys more. And so Leslie just sent me a text or called me earlier this year and was like, would you want to go take a trip to Norway to see Florine? And I was like, yes, yes, like no question. And so we bought the tickets. It was kind of surreal. I was like, I can't believe this is coming together. And yeah, Leslie and I met in Chicago and flew and stayed with Florine for 5 days. And we literally talked about sewing nonstop. I think her husband was like, when are they going to run out of things to talk about? But we looked at every single pattern available and talked about our plans. And it just solidified how amazing these connections can be that you can make through Instagram. Like, I think we all probably started communicating over Instagram and eventually moved to email. And these are like real, real friendships. I just feel really lucky. And also like, yeah, it just feels surreal to me that you can talk with someone halfway across the world and go see them and they can feel just like the best friend you grew up with. So yeah, I just feel a lot of love for those ladies.
Caroline and I both have goosebumps.
Yeah. Really?
Oh, warm and fuzzy. Yeah. Such a sweet story. And I think it's a great inspiration for anyone out there who's thinking about making some more sewing friends. It can be awkward and difficult at first. But yep. I love what you said about Leslie in particular and how she's a good friend and she always checks in and sees how things are going. Mm-hmm. And I have some people like that in my life too. And it is so appreciated. And a great way to establish a friendship is to put yourself out there in that way.
Yeah. And it's okay to lean into these things online, you know, like, I know that I've heard people feeling like, oh, I know she's super busy. I don't want to reach out to her, you know, about reaching out to other people. And it's like, no, I love it when people reach out. So if you have someone online who you really like love their style or you think they're funny or you were like, oh, you know, I feel like we'd be really good friends. Just Don't hesitate to send a message because I'm sure it'll be reciprocated.
Yeah. And you don't even have to live in the same city or the same country.
Exactly. Yeah.
That is awesome. Yeah. That's how Helen and I met. I mean, it was all through Instagram. So it's just all of that. It's a testament to all those real relationships that can be formed through social media and the sewing community.
Yes,
it's great.
Absolutely. Yep.
Okay. We want to talk about your sewing, what you've been sewing, your style, your closet, all of that kind of stuff. So do you have a closet full of indie sew samples?
Got a lot of, yes. Although I don't keep anything that is something I wouldn't wear. So we sell a lot of our samples in a charity auction a couple times a year. But yeah, I would say like 95% of my closet is indie sew samples or, you know, things I've sewn for the blog or what have you.
And how often do you sew for yourself?
Often. I would say the first 2 or 3 years of indie sew, I wasn't sewing as often for myself. I was sewing samples that I knew weren't really my style. And it did feel kind of like, I would just say that my hobby like became less exciting when I was just sewing for other purposes. So in the last year, I've really transitioned to like, okay, I'm going to sew every week, at least like Wednesdays and Fridays are usually my sewing days. And I'm going to get these things checked off the list that I've talked about needing forever, like a chambray button up I haven't had for like 5 years. And so, yeah, I would say every week I'm probably sewing like a good 10 hours for myself, knowing that I will blog about it. So, I mean, there's always kind of that benefit. But yeah,
Yeah, no, that's really great. And I'm sure like you sew, you know, you're mentioning sewing twice a week, 10 hours. So you must have like a pretty high sewing output. So do you purge your closet often?
Yeah, I don't get attached to clothes, I would say. And most of that stuff goes in our sample sale. So I just take things out of the closet as I realize I'm not wearing them. Probably two times a year we have the sale, and I probably empty out my closet like three or four times a year, or like get rid of the stuff I don't need. So yeah, it's kind of I feel very lucky in that regard. Don't get me wrong, that like I kind of have a constant rotating wardrobe. And so that keeps things really fresh. And I actually like really enjoy getting dressed most mornings.
And you did a great story a while back about how to prepare your clothes if you're going to donate them or consign them. So can you tell us your tips for that? Because that was so informative.
Things will not, even at Goodwill, typically will not get put out if they're in like rough shape. So, or even if like, if there's any mending to be done, if there's a hole in the seam or
a button missing,
like I really encourage people to just go and fix those things before you donate them. If you're going to consign things, you definitely should do that because you'll get more money, obviously, or there's just a better chance they'll actually take the things to consign. When you're sewing things are handmade. It's really hard to consign things because a lot of consignment shops look for a brand label, and often they're looking for a size label too. So I've started just sewing an IndieSew label into the clothing with a little size label. I just got them off of Amazon so that they know what size it is, where they can hang it up in the store. And while often they're like going to look at IndieSew and realize like, oh, this isn't a retail shop, we don't know how to value the thing. But sometimes they'll take stuff if it's in really good shape. If you're donating, you don't necessarily need to do that, although they do like to see a size label in there. So yeah, just making things look good. If you're donating shoes, especially, like I clean the shoes really well before donating them, just so that they don't go in the trash. A lot of Goodwills and a lot of thrift stores have to throw away a lot of stuff. So that makes me sad.
Yeah, it is sad how much of that donated fabric and garments just ends up in the landfill. So I think it was a great story that you did just to educate people about how you do need to wash and prepare things before you donate them so that people will actually get to see them on the rack and get to purchase them.
Yeah, exactly.
So what are some of your favorite TNT patterns?
Gosh, the Kila tank has become kind of a TNT that I'm wearing layered under things a lot, but the ginger jeans and the Persephone pants are probably my two most worn bottom layers. The Archer button-up, I'm such a button-up person, I could wear one every day. And the Gemma tank, the Lane Raglan is a really good kind of cozy knit tee, and the Halifax hoodie is like I'm a real big fan of zip up hooded sweatshirts for like walking the dog in the morning. Those are the ones those are the things I currently have on my to make list this fall.
You have such a great casual style, and I like seeing your outfits of the day posts on Instagram as well, because you go through what you're wearing and you're not fussy. You know, you like what you like and you want to wear those basic, the jeans, the t-shirts, the hoodies. And I love that. And it looks so cute and cash.
Thank you.
Yeah. One thing I wanted to ask you about was I've been following you for a while, and I remember a while back you were talking about experimenting with different styles and kind of like broadening your personal style a little bit. And you were trying out Le Tote, I think, for this reason, to be able to just try on different things and then send them back and, you know, be able to experiment a little bit. So how did that go for you? And do you have any tips for our listeners on experimenting with personal style?
I loved my Le Tote subscription. It's, if people don't know, it's similar to Stitch Fix, where you get, you pay a monthly price and then you get a box of clothing. It's all used. So like anything you send back, you can wear the things as many times as you want and then send them back, and they wash them and clean them and then they send them to the next person. So it feels a little bit more sustainable than Stitch Fix. And I did find a lot of great silhouettes, like this amazing wrap skirt that I still have on my mind and I want to recreate. Actually, my favorite pair of Free People high-waisted jeans came from that subscription, and actually was probably the reason I got into high-waisted pants to begin with. So yeah, I think it just broadened my mind to different colors, especially like I would never buy or make something in pink, but I got this pink sweater and I wear it all the time. So just kind of broaden my horizons in that way. I did discontinue the subscription because one, it started to feel expensive, which I think was happens a lot with subscription models where you, the first month you don't see the value, you like quit it. And they were just shipping a lot of their stuff is polyester, which makes sense because they need to wash it. It needs to like hold up well to multiple washings and it can't look worn out for people. But I was just really not into keeping anything that was 100% polyester. So it was a great kind of short-term way, but you could also do this just by going to a store and trying on a bunch of clothes. But I do really encourage people to pull things off the rack that you would never reach for and see what you think. How does it make you feel is probably the number one piece of advice. Like if it makes you feel awesome, if you feel like, you know, any adjective, powerful, you know, smart, whatever makes you feel good, then yeah, think about working it into your wardrobe.
I love that idea of thinking about how it makes you feel and not necessarily mm-hmm. like placing value on how you look in the mirror. And I really, really am looking forward to chatting with you about body confidence. And you've been sharing on your personal Instagram a little bit more your thoughts about body positivity, body confidence, diet culture, all of that kind of thing. So would you mind chatting with us a little bit about that?
Yes, this feels so like raw. It's just a thing. Intuitive eating and diet culture is a thing that I have only started learning about in the last 2 months. And holy moly, I have never felt more passionate about anything in my entire life, like literally. And I'm going to be fully honest, I came to intuitive eating as a new way to diet. I was like, okay, I've done Whole 30. And this is so silly. I've got quote unquote 5 pounds to lose. I'm going to try intuitive eating because that sounds like a way that I could arrive at my natural body state. And as I got into it, as I listened to tons of podcasts, I've just been like hungry for information. I'm probably consuming like 2 or 3 hours of information on this topic a day. I realized, thank God, that the diet culture had, you know, was seeping into every crevice of my life. And my entire life was thinking about what my body looked like. And it was, I just came to it. And I also had somebody kind of reflect a moment when I was going out to dinner with a friend and he said, what new diet plan are you on? Like, and he said it with a lot of kindness, but it was like, we obviously got a plan around that. And this is someone I've been friends with for years. And I was like, oh God, like, I think I've had some disordered eating, and learning more about what disordered eating looks like. And just realizing that I have spent, I would say most of my life, I remember being super young, you know, 8 years old, thinking about what my body looks like. And I am so freaking tired of it.
I mean, yes, agreed.
Right? Like, oh my gosh, I'm just. And so I started reading about, a lot about this. I'm listening to the Food Psych podcast and reading the book Intuitive Eating, and finally just letting myself eat whatever the heck I want to eat and not worrying about how much I'm working out and whether I feel bloated, because these are like, it's just, it doesn't matter. Like, there's so much more to life. We are not bodies. We are not just solely bodies. We are so much more than bodies. And I'm just sick of wasting mental space on it. So, but it has been vulnerable. I've gotten some on my personal Instagram profiles where I've been sharing this stuff, and I have definitely gotten the food police hit me up in my DMs, you know, like, you're promoting obesity, which is just a ridiculous comment. I don't understand. Like, nobody's promoting obesity. That's absurd. Your restriction is actually a good thing. Feeling hungry and not letting yourself eat is actually a good thing. And so I'm feeling very vulnerable because I tend to avoid controversy. but I also feel really passionate. I feel like, I almost feel like this might be a new life calling for me. Like, part of me is like, holy moly, I'd love to be a food therapist. Like, I would love to like help people. There's this concept of health at every size, that, you know, like, health does not equal a body size, that really I totally disagreed with about 2 years ago. And I was definitely, I was that person who was like, we all need to be healthier. And I was a health, very elitist about health. And I've totally flipped that story 100%. And I think diet culture is only making people feel worse about themselves and
And making them unhealthier in the long run.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Unhealthier mentally and physically. And I totally agree with you. You know, you can be healthy at any size. I have super skinny friends who eat nothing but junk food all the time. And I have, you know, larger people in my life who live very healthy lifestyles and get tons of exercise. And it's all dependent on what feels good for you. And there is no like right way to look that represents what is healthy.
Yeah. And it's such an impossible ideal. Like, you know, I do live in a smaller body and I've gotten some feedback from people online who are like, I would never have assumed you would have issues with this. I would have thought body issues or thinking about your body just goes away at a certain point. And it's not, it's pervasive. It's people in the smallest bodies are still thinking about this. And also bodies are all different. Like there have been bigger bodies since the beginning of time. Like there have been larger bodies forever. We have proof. And it just, I don't want like other people. I know we all do, but I just really like, I don't want other people to feel like they need to be something different than they are.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I love that you're sharing about this and being open and honest about it on social media. And the fact that it's kind of a journey and you're still learning about it, I just really enjoy following you for your sort of raw realness.
Thank you.
Yeah, I guess I did want to ask you, like, do you ever struggle to put yourself out there like that and be so open and honest with the community? I know you mentioned like getting some feedback. So how do you kind of deal with that feedback and move forward and continue to be open?
It's tough, man. I can see why people kind of step away if they get any sort of backlash, because while I do generally have pretty thick skin, I don't have thick skin around people making assumptions about me or about where I come from or about how I have no patience for it. And I do get angry, and I can understand, I can empathize with people who I follow now who do, I guess, call people out on Instagram or the haters. But I also don't necessarily feel like that is contributing to anything positive. So I tend to try to just ignore those people or just ask them to leave. Like if you don't agree, it's totally fine. This has come up a lot in my life this year, is that you are going to disagree with people, and you're going to disagree with people you love, and that's okay. And it's okay to also just decide to remove yourself from the conversation if you feel like it. So I'm trying to approach it with empathy. I'm trying to remember that I was that person a couple years ago that just wanted everybody to be healthy and wanted to tell everyone that. And so I'm trying to just brush it off. Mm-hmm. But I can see how if you get a lot of backlash, it can definitely make you want to stop talking about things for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I can imagine that it's difficult. But I think that what you're doing is really important, and keeping that conversation going, especially, I don't think we talk a lot about that in the sewing community. Yeah. So I think it's really, really great that you're being open about it. I have a question in my mind. I don't know if I'm gonna be able to formulate this properly, but okay. I'm interested to know how this whole journey is kind of relates to your personal style and your sewing mm-hmm. practice. And Helen and I are working right now on an episode about sewing struggles and how, you know, those situations where sewing doesn't make you love your body, or where, you know, it kind of has almost a negative effect on your self-image and your body confidence. And mm-hmm. you mentioned you've kind of dealt with a little bit of, you know, dieting over the years and disordered eating in some ways. And how has that affected your relationship with your personal style and with sewing? Mm. And how do you see that going in the future now that you're sort of shifting your mindset?
That's a good question. I think I'm probably an anomaly in that I take a lot of photos of myself. So on Instagram, there's an outfit of the day post every day. And then on the blog, I'm modeling a lot of things. And that was really hard for me at the beginning. I was just like, Photoshop and like, just like, oh, like, this is so hard. Like, oh gosh, I can't believe that's what my arms actually look like. Like feeling cringy about a lot of things. And I just have to say, if you start taking photos of yourself a lot, that will go away. You will start to really appreciate like, oh yeah, I look good. Or I love how that fits me. Or that color is really good on me. So that's kind of the first thing I try to tell people who sew, especially if you're feeling weird about looking at photos of yourself, just start taking more photos of yourself and looking at them. But yeah, I struggled with that at the beginning of you know, sewing things. I also didn't have a sense, I really didn't have a sense of personal style when I started Indie Sew. And I was just sewing, I was picking out crazy fabrics that weren't really my style and sewing silhouettes that I didn't know if I liked wearing them or not. And then I was just wearing the clothes and then I wasn't understanding why I was not feeling good in the clothes and I was feeling frumpy. Honestly, also sewing clothes that don't fit. Like I got real honest about the fact that like I have to grade out at the hips. Like it's okay. It's not a big deal. And so, you know, when you wear something that's too tight, and this is a piece of a nugget I got from Stacia Savasuk. She has an online style workshop. I've taken it and it's amazing. If something doesn't fit, especially if it's too tight and it's cutting in to your skin, we often have this habit of going to this place of my body is the problem. My hips are too big. I have love handles. Like this muffin top is gross. I'm gross. But then the minute you put on something that fits and doesn't cause these feelings of too tightness, those thoughts go away completely. And so I think I've learned if I want to feel good in something, maybe I shouldn't choose the size smaller than what my size measurements put me in because they're going to be too tight. And then I'm going to maybe spiral to a place that my body's a problem. So I've gotten really just honest about like the data. This is what my hip measurement is. I'm going to want an extra inch of ease. Like, okay, we're just going to modify the pattern in that way. But I do want to like make everyone aware that fit issues are not a big problem for me. And so I don't necessarily have the trouble that people do, or just like, you know, the frustration that comes from like having to make a bunch of changes because you have to do a full bust adjustment, you know, or a sway back and that sort of thing. And so I just want to like, I have a little privilege there with it. Like what I sew generally fits pretty well out of the envelope, but I really empathize with people who struggle with that. And also like, I understand when people like maybe step away from sewing for a little bit because they can't get a dart, you know, to work with their bust. So yeah, that's my evolution. I don't know if that makes sense.
It does. I mean, you're working through your thing. Other people are working through their things. It's never going to be a complete and total overlap, right? Everyone has something that they're struggling with. And that's the whole point of the episode that's going to be coming out soon. We hear stories from all different perspectives.
Oh, I can't wait to hear that. Yeah.
It's been really amazing. And one thing that I noticed when getting those stories in our inbox is that they often have a positive ending to them. They have that positive outcome or a change of outlook that forces people to go in a more positive direction. And I really love that people are ending their stories on a high note.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Persistence pays off.
Yeah. Oh, thank you so much, Allie, for chatting with us about this. We really enjoy talking to you today about your business and everything that you've got going on. I think you're just fascinating and really inspiring. And yeah, just
thanks for being part of the community. Thank you. Yeah, keep doing what you're doing. Every sewist I meet and talk to listens to your podcast. So it's such an asset for us.
Oh, that's so exciting. Okay, so tell our listeners where they can find you online.
Yes. Yeah, so we're at indiesew.com. It's IndieSew. And you can find us on Instagram at indie_sew and on Facebook at indiesew. And we're on Pinterest too.
If people want to follow along with you personally, where can they find you on Instagram?
Yeah. So I'm at ali.s.olson, O-L-S-O-N, on Instagram. And that's where I'm sharing some intuitive eating, diet culture stuff. There's not much sewing over on that profile, but there's a little bit of knitting and a little bit of gardening and just a lot of body positivity.
Well, thank you again so much for coming on today. We had so much fun chatting with you.
Thank you guys. Have a good one.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.
That's it for today's episode of Love to Sew. You can find me, Helen, at helenscloset.ca and Caroline at blackbirdfabrics.com.
We're recording today in sunny Vancouver, Canada, and you can get in touch with us and get links for everything we talked about in this episode at lovetosewpodcast.com.
And if you're enjoying the show and you want to help us out, you can support us on Patreon. Contribute $5 or more a month and you'll get access to our bonus episode feed. Go to patreon.com/lovetosew for more info.
Our show is produced by Sam Humphrey.
Thank you, Sam.
Thank you all so much for listening, and we will talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You get a pattern.
You get a pattern. We love indie patterns. Woo!